100 African-American men at Chicago police stations. He was recently released from prison. At 11:30 today, join us for the film show. Today, filmmaker Toby Froud explains how a new generation is helping keep the art of puppet animation fresh. Also, Dan Halstead talks about the Hollywood Theater's move to bring 70mm film screenings back to Portland. And OMSI's Christy Pizio and Russ Rep, talk about the local museum's current animation exhibition. Thank you, KBOO members, for your support during our recent membership drive. You keep KBOO strong. Join us for up next. It's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. Headlines, interviews, including today's guest, Diane Rourke, and commentary. That is all coming up next on KBOO.
I'm Rusty Butler, a Siletz tribal member. I got in trouble with the law when I was 14 years old and spent my teenage years behind the bars. My culture and traditions helped me find my way. I now work with the Siletz youth in my community. Hear my story on Prison Pipeline, November 3rd at 6:30 p.m.
Nanta Sri Nagi Thai, Nanta Ha Ha Ha, Nanta Ha.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, October 23rd, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM on the air, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is Diane Rourke. Does that name ring a bell? It should. Recently, no less a luminary than James Ryson spoke extensively about the role that Diane played, her courage in the face of the massive architecture of the American security state. This goes back to an article that appeared in the New Yorker on in May of 2011 by Jane Mayer. It was called The Secret Sharer, and we can put links to that story on the KBOO website. It's essentially a story of Thomas Drake, a former senior executive at the NSA, who faced some of the worst charges that could be brought against an American citizen. On June 13th, he was 54 years old, former government employee, was scheduled to appear in a courtroom in Baltimore where he faced some of the gravest these charges. His story is, and Diane Rourke, my guest's story, as well as William Benier and others, makes for some high drama, and it could only have emerged from the security state that we now live in post USA Patriot Act, which many people, if you are out in public in any city, tap anyone on the shoulder and ask them what they think of the USA Patriot Act, they will give you usually a blank stare. That is terrifying. Ben-Gurion said at the onset of the Israeli presence in the Middle East, the old will die and the young will forget. Well, apparently already the young have forgotten that we live underneath the shadow of the USA Patriot Act, and we must not let that happen. It is only because of the courage of people like Diane Rourke that we are constantly made aware of the fact that we have no freedom, and when finally that the finger does point at us and the hammer comes down, then and only then will the individual American realize the grave danger that we all face, and that were it not for whistleblowers like Thomas Drake, Diane Rourke, William Binney, we would be in far, far greater straits than we are right now. There are a couple of other, we've got just a few things that we have in the way of headlines. Yesterday, the city council here in Portland voted 4-0 to appeal part of a federal judge's order on periodic court hearings to track the progress of the police reforms. And that said, and Earth Justice has this for us, drought hysteria may have hit the top hats in Sacramento hard. The California Department of Food and Agriculture published a draft of an environmental plan giving the agency authority, get this, to spray toxic pesticides anywhere in the state of California at any time in an indefinite future with no warning for anyone. And CIA Director John Brennan in March claiming allegations of CIA hacking beyond the scope of recent CIA agents. Get this. Also, CIA agents impersonated Senate staffers while the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence was producing its report on the agency's rendition, detention, and interrogation program. That said, we also have news on upcoming elections in Navajo Nation. It all comes down to language. Also, a number of other indigenous nations have forbidden fracking and pipelines on their territory. One in the Dakotas has taken on no less than TransCanada's Keystone XL. That said, I want to welcome, warm welcome to the KBOO airwaves back again, Diane Rourke. Diane, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Good morning, Chris.
Well, a lot of the questions I have were prompted by James Rice and this book, Pay Any Price, Power and the Endless War, that it says it came out on the 14th. Rice has high praise for you. He writes, people like Diane Rourke, she was perhaps the most courageous whistleblower of the post-9/11 era, and yet her story has never been fully told. She fought a lonely battle against the most powerful forces unleashed in Washington in the global war on terror, and she's never received the recognition she deserves. That, so says James Rice. Can you tell our listeners exactly what you did that has elicited this praise?
I went to people that I knew or that I knew about in the legislative, executive, and judicial branches to try to stop the program, or else to at least at a minimum get the civil liberties protections restored to it that had been built into it but deactivated. So I went to quite a number of people. Some of them refused to see me. Some did see me. But it became clear that because this was sanctioned at the very top at the White House, other people were simply going along with it.
So back in May of 2011, Jane Mayer wrote about Thomas Drake. What role did he play? A lot of your stories... are being retold now because, of course, as we all know, Citizen 4 comes out tomorrow amid enormous fanfare, which it richly deserves. Laura Poitras has done an incredible job here. It's part, the third part of it, of a trilogy, and has been eagerly awaited for some time. In the film, Edward Snowden and speaks. Your story is linked to that of Edward Snowden. He's revealed all of everything, pretty much, almost everything, and has also hinted that there may be other whistleblowers in the NSA and in the Obama administration who may be emboldened to come forward once this film comes out. Can you suggest... How that might happen? Will it be safer for whistleblowers once this film has been released?
I think the collective treatment of Tom Drake, myself, Bill Binney, Kirk Wiebe, Ed Loomis, the five of us who were accused of conspiracy to overturn this, it was deliberately intended as a warning to all other intelligence community employees what would happen to them if they dared to break, to squeal, in essence. And so I think it was meant to instill fear, and there has been a program since then in which everybody in the intelligence community is supposed to be spying on their fellow employees and turning them in if they see the slightest indications that there may be something awry. So I believe there has been a deliberate effort to tamp down on whistleblowing. And now it may have backfired somewhat. I think perhaps the revelation that other people actually did something inspires people to realize that they should do something too. But there's no doubt probably that for the vast majority, this probably worked.
So many times is the case that that the safest place to hide is in full public view. With this film coming out, do you have any notion of others who might be willing to speak out? Because, of course, this is what the administration is up to, is probably far worse than even what Edward Snowden has revealed.
Yes, if the revelations of Russell Tice are correct, there have from almost the beginning been very highly compartmented programs to target elites in the United States, opinion elites in all three branches, including even in the White House, to make sure that they do not break ranks, and also to be able to control the news and so on. But anyway, I don't know of any other whistleblowers. I know that Glenn Greenwald has indicated that there is another person who is talking to him. I have heard that whistleblower organizations have been busy, and I would also say right here that if anybody intends to contemplate that, what they should do first is go to one of those organizations and get advice and help from them to protect themselves legally.
Absolutely, yeah, and encryption is becoming a field of great interest to a lot of people. Here in Portland, anyway, Free Geek teaches classes on how to upgrade one's own encryption and suggestions on how to protect one's electronic privacy. This is a burgeoning new field in the aftermath. Can you tell our listeners who Russell Tice is and what role that he played? A lot of people are not familiar with him in this whole scenario. They should be, but not.
Russell Tice, shortly after the New York Times revealed the part of the program in December of 2005, in early 2006, Russell Tice came forward and said that he had been one of the New York Times sources. The administration went around and tried to blackball him and, I think, tell reporters that he was somewhat off mentally. That's what they tried to do so they wouldn't listen to him. And in large part, they have not listened to him. But he was a contractor at the National Reconnaissance Office, a National Reconnaissance Office ground station, satellite ground station. And he says that the satellites, not only the fiber optic lines and other things were involved in domestic surveillance, but also the signals intelligence satellites. And he said he saw in the burn bag indications of these exceptionally compartmented programs.
And we are now, of course, as always, almost out of time. We've got about a minute left. Is there anything else that you would like to mention to listeners? This film comes out tomorrow. You, in the March of 2002, before you left the committee, you arranged a breakfast with the committee chairman, Porter Goss. That was your, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was your last effort to get to follow your conscience and do the right thing.
No, actually, I went on and through the end of the summer after I retired, and Mr. Goss actually arranged the meeting with me. But in terms of what I would like to say in addition, I would like to emphasize that unless the courts finally do their job, which they have not done so far, the only way we are going to stop this or turn it back even partially, much less 180 degrees, is if the voters take control. Because the control through the leadership of the House and Senate, which completely support the administrations on this, has prevented any effective legislation to overturn it. So we have to put pressure on our representatives and force them to take a stand and vote accordingly and make this a big issue in our voting. The polls show that a majority oppose the domestic surveillance, but the problem is it hasn't become a major election issue. And it's only when these representatives are threatened with loss of office that we will get someplace.
Diane, I want to thank you very much for this. You are indeed a courageous person and very deserving of everything that James Ryson has said. We're going to put links to his piece on crypto, as well as to the Janet Mayer piece that came out in the New Yorker a while back. This has been Air Cascadia, Thursday, October 23rd, 2014. And Ruk Bergeron engineered the show today for us. Thanks for that, Ruk. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we'll speak with our own Michael Smith about the Spanish edition of his book, Who Killed Che?